flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
You said on Saturday that you hear the fans and some of the chants. Does that affect you?
No, for me, it's all about the guys in the locker room. And it's all, look, they're disappointed in the record. I understand that. And look, even with you guys in the media, I understand what your job is, and that's okay. My thing is, it's always about the team, and it's about winning football games.
Are you concerned or worried about that this could be your last game on Sunday?
No, for me, it's all about just focusing on the Bills trying to win that game.
I was Gerard Mayo yesterday, not the only one being asked about his job security. It's Jones and Keith here on WEEI. High noon as we usher in the new year with all your phone calls, 617-779-7937. I'd be a little nervous about that job security.
Yeah. Now, we don't know what his contract is, right?
No.
He's going to get paid all of it.
Yeah.
So maybe he's not as worried as some people would be.
He's not going to get hired somewhere else and get all of his money. No.
No,
he'll be out of a job in the
Crafts. Hot commodity?
The Crafts will have to pay two head coaches. Here's a serious
question. The Jets would look at him?
Would anybody even hire him as a defensive coordinator?
I
don't think so either.
I don't think so.
That's crazy.
Is it?
No, but I'm saying.
You seen the defense this year?
But that'd be a crazy reason to keep him. If Robert Kraft looked at it that way and goes, this guy wouldn't get hired as a coordinator if we fired him.
No, the Bruins fire head coaches, and those guys have a job the next hour. if the Patriots fired Mayo,
it's a good point.
Yeah.
He wouldn't even get a coordinator job.
No.
He's never had one.
I don't think he would.
So it's unbelievable that they're not, I don't think, going to move on from Mayo. But the hot seat is on fire. I don't know if we can get this up on Twitch.
How about me? I'm in the shop now.
Keith is...
I'm in on Grok.
In the week and a half off, Keith is in the AI lab.
I am.
And created quite an image of Gerard Mayo today.
I said I wouldn't do it. I wanted to do... Yeah, if you go to my Twitter, Terp, it's at Keith21. I just went in the shop, dialing up while I'm in traffic, and I got Gerard Mayo on a hot seat, a literal hot seat.
And it's hot.
The seat is on fire.
I think it's a good visual description of what he's dealing with.
I've decided to embrace the robots.
I like that.
My kids got two robots for... Look at that.
Oh, there you go. That is a hot seat.
Gerard Mayo on a hot seat.
He looks like the Human Torch.
Yo, yeah, that seat's on fire. But he's still pretty chill about it. He's like, that's me. That's basically like the This Is Fine meme with the guy in the house on fire drinking a coffee.
He looks angrier than the This Is Fine meme.
Yeah, he does.
He doesn't look like he thinks it's fine.
But he's like trying to pretend like, I'm not really on fire. Yeah, you're on fire.
You're on fire, dude. The hot seat is on fire.
Speaking of AI, you know what my kids got for Christmas?
I don't.
Furbies.
Oh.
These things, they don't shut up. They're like back and forth. They're hungry all the time.
Those things making a comeback?
I think so. At least in my house, they are.
Is a Furby like a...
Looks like a Mogwai.
Got it.
From Gremlins.
Oh,
it looks just like a Mogwai, where I feel like there's some copyright infringement.
What was the little video game? Like the Tamagotchi or whatever?
It's Game Boy?
No. Like where you had to keep the animal alive? It's not one of those.
No, it's like a little animal.
What
it's
were
like
those called?
A pet.
That's Tamagotchi.
Tamagotchi.
No, this is...
Look, oh, there's a that's a Furby?
How about Terp finding the Furby in a second? He had that ready to go? He had that in his favorites?
Terp's like, my retirement depends on these.
Yes, yeah, so
my collection of Furbies.
CeCe and Georgie both got Furbies. They talk to each other. They, like, dance. They speak their own language, but also our language. They're great. They're magical creatures.
They came out, what, like 20 years ago?
I think so.
I remember we had one.
These are Beanie Babies to Terp, I'm sure.
Yes.
Furbies.
They're old, but, like... A month ago, CeCe was like, I really want a Furby. And we're like, really? Okay.
Like, we had one and we purposely, like, tried to, like, see how far we could get it to, like, humanize it.
They're human.
Right. They started coming to life, and then it was my brother-in-law and one of my brother's friends caused it to flatline.
Really?
It literally flatlined because they kept, like, clapping in its face.
It didn't like that.
It didn't like it, and it went, whoa, whoa, and then went, boop. I right hand up to God. Right. So we had to take the batteries out, which basically reset the whole
That's
thing.
That's a whole new thing.
We made so much progress with it, and these pains in the ass just, like, gave the poor thing a heart attack by startling it by
Can't
clapping
do that.
At it.
You just got to give them pizza every once in a while, and then let them sleep. Like, they chill out.
Right,
they sleep.
It's all.
But what's crazy is they can work together, right? And, like, one of them becomes the leader.
Okay.
You guys are going to be murdered in a month.
Because they show up, like, the same, right? Like, you get them, you're like, hey, these are the same things.
Yeah,
but then, like, once they start communicating, one of them becomes the alpha.
Yeah.
And right now, they just go on and on and on.
Twitch is saying they're Chinese spy devices, Keith. So look out for that in the Keith household.
So is your cell phone.
Yeah, I was going to say my
Get in line, Furby.
Yeah. So is your TikTok account.
The whole thing.
617-779-7937. You can jump in on a variety of topics, Furbies included.
Yep.
Mayo not the only one talking about his job security?
No.
I read a snippet of Alex Van Pelt earlier today. I want to read the full.
There's more?
I want to read the full answer about his job security.
Please.
The question was, when teams only win 3 games, there are questions about job security.
No doubt.
How do you view that at this point? Do you expect to be back next year? Is it a distraction? So that's a lot of questions in the question.
Wow.
Alex Van Pelt. No, this is business. We all signed up for this. When you win 3 games, it's tough, obviously. The thing I can hang my hat on is that this team played hard. Again, debatable.
The whole time?
And there's not been any game where they have not put out their full efforts. Really? I thought the Cardinals game.
Saturday?
I thought the Chargers game.
Yeah.
He said that's impressive.
Yeah, it is.
I've been around teams that were out of the playoffs and just kind of cruised to the end. He said, we're going to try to finish strong. We started fast.
Fast? They won a game.
They won one game. That's a fast start?
Well, they won a third of their games week one.
That's a good point.
So.
That was my message to them. And with a win this season is how we started. Let's finish strong with a win at home in front of our crowd, who loves this coaching staff, as we saw last
Saturday. Yeah,
they're
on board. They love the whole operation.
Whatever happens after that, we'll see. That's ominous. I'd love to be back. I really like the organization.
Sure.
I like our guys.
Yeah.
I think there's stuff to build on there. But again, that's out of my control.
We both have defended him throughout much of the year. Early on, weren't the biggest fans. I mean, he was the 13th choice and all that stuff. But grading it compared to the other coaches, he's been the best one. But he was fired the second Jonathan Kraft was seen on TV saying the play calling's horrible.
Yep.
How can you bring that guy back?
You can't.
You can't. And you're either going to try to protect Mayo, in which you have to fire both coordinators, or if you don't fire, to me, he's gone either way. Whether he should or shouldn't be, I guess, is more of a debate, and people we can discuss that. But you can't keep him with Mayo, because then you're not making really any changes. But you also can't, I don't know, if they both go, aren't you bringing, or you're not going to fire Mayo and keep Van Pelt, I don't think, either. That seems odd. Like, you're going to either do the big tear down and, like, hey, fans, we heard you loud and clear. We're changing everybody. Or you can't keep him and then tell the head coach, like, well, you got to keep this guy as your OC. He's like, wait, what? Like, I can't pick my staff?
Right.
So now you're putting that guy behind the eight ball to start his career.
So, to me, Van Pelt and Covington are gone. Wolf is probably back. Mayo, if I had to guess, is probably back. I wouldn't do it. And, Bedard, will play the clip again. I think he said 60 to 65% he's back. That's low for a beat writer.
Yeah.
And you got guys like this. I read you Curran earlier today, ratcheting it up, putting it on the crafts and saying, all right, it's here. No more doublespeak. What are you going to do? Now's the time to make a decision, meaning Monday. to actually announce it. They're probably making the decision now. Here's what Reese wrote on Sunday, the day after their loss to the Chargers, which was embarrassing on a number of levels, right? They say they're going to start start Antonio Gibson. They start Ramondre Stevenson. Keon White says changes have to be made before the game. Mayo spends time after the game saying that's not what Keon meant. Then after the game, he says, no, I stand by what I said. You have Ladd McConkey catching touchdowns all over you in that game. Lifeless effort against Justin Herbert, who you had dominated every other start when he went against Bill Belichick. Gerard Mayo couldn't figure him out. So just a disaster game. Here's what Reese wrote. Team owner Robert Kraft has important decisions to make on the future of Mayo and first-year executive vice president of player personnel, Elliot Wolf. So he lumps in Wolf.
Put him in there.
Like, to Reese, Wolf is not safe. It's generally out of the norm. Yes. Maybe the last time we hear that.
Yeah, but sadly.
It is generally out of the norm to move on after one season, but there also needs to be tangible evidence that things are heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I don't see it.
They did start fast, though. I heard they started fast week one.
True.
Is a week one win at Cincinnati that no one saw coming enough of a feather in Mayo's cap? I'd say no. Is one a 2-6 record in one score games, which include a 24-21 loss to the Bills, enough progress? As for Wolf, the best thing he's done in his first year in charge of personnel is deliver a promising quarterback in Drake May with the number 3 overall pick. He said, does that alone make him safe? The rest of the draft class has been shaky, to put it mildly, particularly at two of the team's top areas of need, receiver and offensive line. And likewise, Wolf's initial free agent class has delivered mixed results. It's the type of season that usually leads to change in some form. After Saturday's embarrassing loss to the Chargers, the chance from the home crowd, and the prospect of another half-filled stadium next week, questions about what that potential change could look like are intensifying. I think that scene, the visual on Saturday.
Yeah, that was
fire Mayo, hire Vrabel, booing the team. Keon White again after the game saying changes need to be made. The optics of saying you're going to start Antonio Gibson, you don't bench him, you start Ramondre Stevenson, Ladd McConkey catching touchdowns on your head, Herbert dominating, that whole scene. Oh, and by the way, as you said, it's a standalone nationally televised game where Ross Tucker's ripping you. The whole country gets to watch this mess, this disaster that you are. The Crafts care about those optics. So if they're going to move on, that's as big of a factor in why as anything else. Because the only thing keeping Gerard Mayo here,
yeah,
and to a lesser degree Elliot Wolf, is Robert Kraft's pride and his stubbornness. That's it.
That's got to be it, because there's really nothing. We've tried to find something to highlight that maybe Gerard Mayo does well. We've come up empty doing that. I'm really getting annoyed by the one score game thing. It's the NFL. Take a look at every spread every single weekend. They're almost entirely all one score. Not that the game ends up being one score, but you get my point. They're all designed to be pretty evenly matched games, yeah, for the most part. So I just did a quick, I didn't do this with every team, but the next worst team right now. So the Patriots would have the number 1 pick. They're 3-13. The number 2 pick in the draft right now would go to the Tennessee Titans, who are also 3-13.
By the way,
they beat you head to head.
I don't think Brian Callahan's safe. That's a name also that's come up a lot in the last couple of weeks.
But so if you want to say the Patriots aren't the worst team, which I think most of us agree they are,
mm-hmm,
the next worst team is Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. How are they in one score games?
Do you know how many one score games they've played?
No.
8.
Wow.
Do you know what the record is?
2-6.
2-6.
With a win against?
Yes, you.
Gerard Mayo. Yeah.
But, like, everybody plays close games. Yep. If you play 17 games and you play 8 close games, quick math, you played 9 not close games. How'd you do in those games? Like, you couldn't even keep it close for all those times? Like, that to me is not something to boast about. And Mayo's brought it up a couple of times. People, like, I'm not Barry and Reese for mentioning it, but I'm saying people have brought that up as, like, maybe a positive. I don't look at that as a positive at all. You're in the NFL. You have NFL players, again, varying degree of how many really deserve to be there.
Yeah.
But, like, most teams play half their games close, give or take. And we could do this probably for everybody. But if New England and Tennessee both play 8 close games, I'm guessing everybody else does too.
Yeah. And so,
how many of those close games were 16 points, Drake May scores, gets 2-point conversion,
oh, the
onside kick with 45 seconds?
The Rams game for sure.
Oh, right.
How many, like, backdoor covers were they? Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Like, at the end, if you really watch it, does it feel like the game was within one score the whole time?
The Rams game definitely comes to mind in that scenario.
Yep.
I'd say a lot of the other ones actually probably were real close games off the top of my head. Maybe I'm missing one.
Yeah.
But that was one for sure that fits that criteria. Yeah, that's neck and neck with Well, Dan Campbell was really bad his first year, too. Because I'm tired of that one. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of Dan Campbell was bad in year one. I'm tired of the one-score game discussion. And so, no, I don't think that's a feather in Jerod Mayo's
Cleveland,
cap.
I think, quick look at it, I think is 7 one-score games, you know what I mean? Like, with a game to go. So those are the worst teams in the league. They all play close games.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you referenced this earlier. The Ramondre Stevenson thing, at the end of the day, is not the biggest deal in the world. Who you started at running back. What do I really care about that? But you don't need the unforced error of telling the flagship radio station, we're starting Gibby. We're going to bench Ramondre
Stevenson.
Didn't
tell Gibby, though.
Didn't tell him, and then you start Ramondre Stevenson? Like, that's just embarrassing,
weird, yeah.
And it's completely unforced.
It is.
Antonio Gibson was asked about this after the game. Here's what he had to say.
We'd heard, you know, possibly that you would be the starting running back today, and then Ramondre gets the first snaps there. Was there any confusion? What were you told before the game?
I was told nothing all week about me starting, so that wasn't even on my mind. I had no type of feelings towards that. We did the same thing we've been doing. Ramondre got his snaps. I got my snaps.
So here's
okay.
Here's where Mayo really is going to lose his job if he loses his job. And I think it's more likely he's back. I wouldn't bring him back, but if you're asking me what I think actually happens, Kraft won't move on from him after 1 year. He won't. But if he does, it's because he's losing the locker room. Like, yeah. You're listening to Gibson, you're listening to Keon White. It's because he's losing. He lost the fan base a long time ago.
It's tough.
Fan
it's
base is way out
sell.
On him.
Yeah.
He has lost the team.
No, he has. And there's nothing that he can do outside of winning a ton of games, which is going to be at least a year away. Like, there's nothing even he can do in the offseason where Mayo stock goes up. If they keep Elliott Wolf and he signs a massive free agent and, you know, gets a million draft picks and whatever, like, his stock can at least go up before they take the field. Mayo's can't. So, like, if you keep him, you're going to go another 9-month cycle where everyone's like, get rid of this guy. Why is he here? And then as soon as the season starts, every loss that piles up is just, why are you wasting your time?
And
people have completely turned on him, whether if they even had his back to begin with.
And he's still going to do media in the meantime, which means
yeah,
you
not
know
as
he's,
much, though.
You know he's going to screw something up. No, it won't be as much, but you know he'll screw something up.
You feel like more wins next season than this past season? Like, is that?
I do feel that way.
Okay. So we got you on record.
You got me on record.
Yeah.
Right, that we're going to win more than 4 games.
Yeah.
I'm on record.
You're on record?
Absolutely.
All right, good. All right, good. All right.
Narrator.
That doesn't even sound like the
they
same
did
guy.
Not.
No, they did not. No, it's officially dead. That dream is officially dead.
Yep.
He doesn't even sound like the same guy anymore.
No, I'm telling you, he's aging like a president. You know, they take the before and after photos, and you're like, what was that, 20 years? You're like, no, that was 4. Like, that's what he's. It's 1 year of him being a head coach.
So if you had to guess, is he back? Not should he be.
Despite
is he
all
back?
Of our reasons to say he shouldn't be, my guess is he will be. I think you're more likely to see both coordinators gone. And I don't know. Wolf, I'm kind of back and forth on. But I think more likely both coordinators gone. And then they just try to sell it to you as that.
Is there anything Mayo can do to save his job? Like, change the Kraft's mind. If they were going to fire him, is there any way he could salvage his job? Or vice versa? Is there any way where you go into the final week saying, we're going to keep him, and then he loses it? Is there anything he can do to lose the job this weekend?
I think if it looks like the last game, maybe. You know, I think it's weird because we're in this spot where the fans, you know, across the board are going to be rooting for a loss, right? Obviously, the players and the coaches are going out there trying to win because that's how your mentality is. So it is in a weird spot. I think if the game, and I know Josh Allen's not going to, you know, play the whole game. If it maps out like 2 weeks ago against Buffalo, that's best case scenario.
Yeah.
You lose, you played hard, it was buttoned up, you didn't have a million penalties, it looks like you coached well, competitive game, take your number one pick and move on to the offseason. But if it's crazy and there's just all kinds of penalties again, or if there's like weird stuff with who's starting, who isn't starting, and you just get boat raced at home, then it's like Mitch Trubisky, then that's going
to
be tough.
So what can Jerod Mayo do to save his job? Has he already lost it? Will he be back for a year or two? You can jump in. 617-779-7937. What's the Patriots' approach in this game? They want to lose it, right? Nobody out there wants to win this game and get a fourth win and screw your draft positioning, right? You can jump in on that. And Drake May, how do they handle him in this game? How much should he play in this game, if at all? We'll get to all of that coming up. In the meantime, it is Brian the receptionist upstairs. What's going on,
Brian? All right,
Brian,
what do you got?
Hello, Brian.
Hey, guys. I have I'm going to redeem myself with a non-Caitlin Clark-related call-in.
Well, we'll see.
I'm going to try to be quick because I have to sort through all of Wiggy's fan mail. But I think that Robert Kraft, we know he cares about two things, right? being invited to the Fanatics white party and hobnobbing with Grant Williams and Shaboozy and getting into the Hall of Fame. I think that if he fires Jerod Mayo, then he can get into the Hall of Fame by bringing in Mike Vrabel and setting off a second dynasty. I mean, they have better ingredients, I think, on paper than the first time around. Potentially number one pick, great young quarterback, and tons of cap space. If you have even a C-level coach, not even an F, if Mayo is just a C, then you're not going to be able to get all that stuff done.
Okay, I think this is fair. And yeah, keep sorting through that mail. If Robert Kraft really cares about getting into the Hall of Fame, which he does, Keith.
Yes, he does. I agree with that. In the white party.
Does that counter? I don't know as much about that.
Yep.
Does that counterbalance? We said over and over and over again, and I agree with it. He's not going to change his mind so quickly on Jerod Mayo. He hired him a year in advance, was in writing. Yeah. He was his handpicked guy from a trip to Israel 5 years ago and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, right.
He's not just going to turn his back on him after 1 year. Is he staring it down going, what if this is what it is and it's a mistake and we're like that? Is he more panicky and more apt to make a rash decision because he is so legacy conscious? And in a weird way, could his motivation for the Pro Football Hall of Fame get him to make the right decision with Mayo, where he's like, I need to turn it around and turn it around quick. Vrabel can turn it around. Sorry, Jerod, you're gone.
Yeah, I just don't think it has anything to do with this Hall of Fame candidacy right now. I think guys are keeping him out. Voters are keeping him out for whatever their reasons are.
So like, you think even if they turned around and started making playoffs and competing for Super Bowl,
if they won the Super Bowl, I think it'd be hard to ignore. But if they just, you know, lost in the wild card round or something like that, which seems like a far ways away, if they did that, I don't think the guy was a six-time Super Bowl winning owner. Like, he should be in. If owners are in, he should be in. We've gone over all that. So I don't know if that would matter.
Whether it matters with the voters or not. How about for his mindset?
No, but for him getting back to that Super Bowl week and being the team and you know, playing all these primetime games and things like that, I think that does wear on him, and that could potentially force that a little bit. What was the other thing that he said in there that I wanted to comment on?
The white party.
No, it wasn't the white Vrabel party thing. Oh, no, something else. He jam-packed a lot of things in there.
Yeah, yeah.
I was disappointed it wasn't about Caitlin Clark. And the Wiki fan mail was a good line.
Wiki fan mail.
Yeah, that was a good line. No, I'll remember what the hell it was after. But no, I don't think it has anything to do with this Hall of Fame candidacy.
You can jump in on that. Brian the Receptionist, big Notre Dame fan, as I found out.
Is that right, too?
Yeah, he's pulling hard for Notre Dame today.
Yeah, 4 o'clock?
Yeah, early start. Okay. All the details coming up here. In Trending with Billy Lanny, we will get back into Jerod Mayo.
Oh, this is what I was going to say.
Yes.
I don't think this team is better suited roster-wise than the 2000 team.
No. I didn't understand that.
Because he was talking
about
starting a second dynasty.
Yeah.
And I know they only won 5 games,
but they had a lot of elements in place from a team that had gone to the Super Bowl already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like Bledsoe at the time we were looking at was like a really good quarterback, but you had Ty Law. Like you had Willie McGinnis. Like you had better guys.
Look, you have the number one pick, you have a ton of cap space, and you have Drake May. Those should be good building blocks, but it's not better than 2000. Yeah, yeah. I'm with you on that. 617-779-7937. We'll get into the plan for week 18. You want him to lose, right?
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Right?
Let's talk about Mayo at this point. I still think, as of today, as of New Year's Eve, I do think he's more probable than not to be back as coach next year. I would put the percentages now at about 60-65%. I thought he had it locked up after the Buffalo game, but what they put out there, if the Crafts know what they're looking at, if they're listening to the right people, if they're asking questions of the right people, that should cause you concern. I mean, to put up that type of performance at home near the end of the season, to me, it shows that there has been no progress. They are regressing, actually. It's getting worse. I don't know. I don't see any path forward to making it better next year. I think they have to entertain the nuclear option, blowing it all up.
That was Bedard. on his podcast. More probable than not, Jerod Mayo's back.
How about that?
I think it's a good way of phrasing it, not just the Ted Wells shout out.
Tip of the cap to Ted.
But I think that's a good way of phrasing it. Like, if I had to guess, Mayo's probably back. But it's getting close. When Reese is saying they really got to look hard at Mayo and Wolf, and teams in this position would look at big changes. And Curran's doing the same thing. Curran's like, what's it going to be, Robert and Jonathan? What are you going to do? And Bedard says it's 60 to 65% he's back. That's low. That's a really, really, really low
number. I thought
it
was 100% for most of the season.
Yeah.
And I was convinced even multiple seasons. Like, when they first hired him, and the way specifically Robert Kraft talked about him and the decision and all this stuff, compared him to his wives, like, picking his wives was like picking Jerod Mayo. That was a real quote.
Yep.
So you're like, that guy's got all the job security in the world. And I also thought what benefited him and what ended up really being sort of the death blow to Bill Belichick was Mayo's not in charge of the roster. So we can laugh at the offensive line we want, and we can look be like the wide receivers. Jerod Mayo didn't pick any of those guys. Now, he's not really coaching them either, it doesn't seem like, but he didn't pick any of them.
No.
Whereas with Bill, you'd be like, you took N'Keal Harry and you lost this game. Whereas with Mayo, it's like, oh, you lost this game. And you don't talk about any of the roster stuff.
Yeah, you thought he was insulated enough from the lack of talent.
You can't scapegoat anybody else around Bill when Bill's in charge of everything. Whereas with Mayo, you can scapegoat everybody you want. Offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, player personnel guy, other position coaches. I just think the season has gone so poorly where it can't be position coaches. We were joking about how all of a sudden, it was like week 10, they're like, couple of different beat reporters like, this wide receiver coach isn't very good. And we're like, what?
Yeah,
we're like, you're blaming that guy?
That's back now, by the way. Curran,
a little bit.
Curran detailed a ton about Tyler Hughes, and that is back. But that's not enough of a move.
It's not enough
Fire
of a move.
Fire the wide receiver coach.
No, God, no. And I think it just speaks to the overall assembly of the coaching staff, which falls kind of on all the guys at the top. I think that's on Kraft as well as Mayo and Wolf. Like, who are the guys you had in mind? You knew you were going to have this job. Talking about Mayo, you knew you were going to have this job. What was your dream team staff? And even if you didn't get everybody, like, what are the next guys? He's like, Covington, he's down the hall. I'll just promote him. Like, we'll keep one of Bill's kids. And I don't know. You guys have an offensive coordinator in mind? I don't know anybody else.
Right.
So then Wolf's like, well, I know Alex Van Pelt, who actually is probably the best hire out of the whole bunch, but. Yeah, and like the whole idea of how is this going to get better going forward? Because that was one of the things I always push back on with the Dan Campbell comparisons is it did get better. And even the people that want to go as far as, well, Bill Belichick, 5-11 his first year. I think they also went like 3-3 in their final six or whatever. Like, they also were better at the end. They were trending.
Was the arrow that far up at the end of that year?
I believe it was.
It was?
I believe they also got off to a bad start. I'll double check exactly what it was, but they weren't very good either.
Or even if you want to go back to Bledsoe, and maybe this is a mark against Drake May, they started winning games at the end of Bledsoe's first year, and you felt like you were building some momentum going into the next year. That's independent of the coach. Like, Parcells wasn't going anywhere with that team. But right, at least you had something to hang your hat on and latch onto.
The Patriots in 2000 were 2-8 and then went 3-3 down the stretch.
Right.
Just like Dan Campbell. This team is going to lose 7 in a row, including, who knows, like TBD on Sunday, but this past Saturday was the worst the team has looked all year.
And a couple of weeks before that, the Arizona game was brutal, and you could lose to the Bills' twos. Like, make no mistake, you could try to win this game, play Drake May the whole game, and you could lose to Buffalo's twos.
Oh, for sure.
Very much in play.
Mm-hmm.
We all want them to lose this game, right? I haven't heard from any callers today that want them to win. I can't imagine anybody wants them to win.
No.
I would hear out starting Drake May and treating it like a preseason game, play him a couple of series. You don't put him above the rest of the team, but then you take him out. And you justify it twofold. You say, well, number one, May's not 100% healthy. He's on the injury report with a fake hand injury.
Yep, that right hand's barking at him.
And on top of that, you get a look at Joe Milton. I mean, I don't think there's any harm in getting a look at Joe Milton in a completely meaningless game.
Let's see him.
So I could be talked into that, but I want them to lose this game. I was not in favor of tanking from week one.
Yeah.
But now it's week 18, your 17th game. And it's a difference between drafting at 1 or 4. What would you rather have?
No, I know. But like we're like, not to overstate it, you could play this game like it was your Super Bowl and lose.
Yeah.
You could play Drake May every single snap. You could all the whole, throw the kitchen sink at the backups for the Buffalo Bills, and you could still lose. But I just feel like this is the time now where it's you're four quarters away from the number one pick in the draft. And then we have all offseason to debate about what you do with the number one pick and all that other stuff, whether it's a player, a trade, et cetera. But no, it's like a must-lose game. You have to lose the game. You can do it with Drake May. You can do it with Joe Milton. But I would especially because he has left the game twice. He started 10 games, and he has left twice. Right? Is it 10 games or 11 games?
I looked it up. I thought he was 2-9. I'll look it up again. I think.
It is 11.
This will be his 12th start, but you're right. He's left two.
But he's left two of them. One of them he couldn't come back in. The other one he did, and then we're like, yeah, maybe you should take him again. So that's not a great percentage that I love. And you can't play scared. Like, I'm not trying to argue that point either. Like, you just never play the guy, put him on ice. But I think it was a no-brainer. And if you want to play him for a series or two, and just give him the week of practice like normal, like all these things help in the development. But you know what also helps in the development? Either having the number one pick or having 2-3 first round picks because somebody moves up to get him and all that. That helps the development of him and the whole team.
100%. Twitch chat asking, what's Joe Milton going to show you? Well, number one, hopefully he loses you the game.
Yeah, I bet he does.
And number two, does he? He's going to show you if he belongs in the NFL and show other teams if he belongs in the NFL and get a look at him in a real game. And hopefully he loses the game on top of it, which is what you want. Matt's in Rhode Island. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Matt.
Hey, what's up, guys? To end the season, I would fully expect Gerard Mayo to say Drake May's not starting, and then the first series, see Drake May trotting out there to start the game.
That is true.
And just quickly on Wise, I just want to make sure, check with my boy. So no booing or chanting when you lose 40-7, the only touchdown being on a penalty that you hooked up and got a touchdown.
Correct.
That's right. Roger, can't boo.
That. Yep. That is,
if you're not with us, you're against us.
That is our guy, Dietrich Weiss.
Yeah, man. I do like Dietrich Weiss. He's been fun interviews. He kind of opened up after the first couple. And I heard that comment this weekend. I was like, come on. Like, now that's a bad sign when you start squawking back at the fans. Like, the fans are undefeated.
And you know
the fans
what?
Are going
to
be here forever.
You know why he's doing it? He's doing it to have his coaches back, which I guess is some evidence, or at least one player on the record.
But Mayo
some
actually had a better answer, shockingly, than any of the players did. He's like, listen, like, nobody wants it. You got to win.
Mayo said some version of this to Greg like a million times this year. He's like, look, I don't care how the fans feel. I don't care what you guys in the media think. It's your right. I understand your job. I don't believe any of that. Like, nobody wants to hear
nobody wants
what
to get
he
booed.
Was hearing.
No, but he also was saying how important it is for the guys in the locker room, and now those guys have turned on him too.
No, that's true. How about, this is a new caller, Heavy in Tewksbury. Go ahead, Heavy.
All right, Heavy.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great.
Hey, my only question is, I don't really want them to win the game, but just to get on the line, I wanted to ask you guys, how did you feel about Suck for Luck?
How do we feel? It said here he wants the Patriots to win the game on Sunday. I thought that was the right move for the Colts then.
I agree.
You know who didn't like it?
Belichick.
Belichick.
He laughed at him.
Yeah.
He's like, stupid. You lose one guy and then this falls apart on you, which I think is fair, right? Because that team going into the year, it's not like they lost Peyton Manning and then they pivoted to that. Meaning like, hey, we were a Super Bowl contender with this guy and now we're going to lose out. Like, that is embarrassing.
Yeah.
But they didn't win a Super Bowl, but I think they made the right call on
me
that.
Too.
They got a really good quarterback for a while.
I would do that. Now, the difference this year is, again, I don't think there is an Andrew Luck in there isn't an Andrew Luck in this draft.
No,
there's
that's
no
why, like,
universal prospect.
You see it in the NBA, right? And the Celtics were a part of it three times. I mean, Tim Duncan was the one. I remember as a kid, like, going nuts for them to lose to try to get Tim Duncan. And that's in a lottery. Teams are still tanking.
Right.
The NFL is like, just suck
you
the worst
it.
And you get it. We will hand it to you. Like the Pittsburgh Penguins multiple years. But I think there's a time and a place for it. If LeBron James or Tim Duncan or Shaquille O'Neal is in the draft and your team's not very good, you think those franchises are happy that they got those guys? I would say so.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. This year they don't have that, but also we're not talking about a year of it. We're talking about Sunday.
We're talking about one game.
One game.
One. That's all. I didn't want them to tank in September. Now, again, there's 1 week to go. It's week 18. You should lose this game.
Now, to be fair, Bill Belichick, now this is different because you were a really good team, but Bill Belichick also lost the game on purpose when it was advantageous to them.
Yeah,
now, that was
playoff
seeding.
Yeah.
You know, Matt Cassel throws a 2-point conversion into the crowd or whatever. Like, that was advantageous, but you can make the same argument that so is this. If it's all about winning and winning at like the ultimate level, sometimes you do need to lose in order to win more.
I would absolutely lose this game. I would do whatever, including Joe Milton. I would play Joe Milton. Oh. I would do whatever it takes.
Ramondre, handle the ball every time. Handle the ball every single time. See how many times, see how long she holds on to it.
But should Drake May play at all? We'll get back into that with all your phone calls. 617-779-7937. Plus, it's been a while since we've been on the air, Keith.
That's true.
How are the Boston Celtics playing? Very good on New Year's Eve.
Wow.
Not so well leading up to that. We have some thoughts on the Celtics. We'll get to them next.
Right back from Cornette. Version of Tatum. Last shot of the quarter here for the Celtics. One more three would tie the highest in an NBA quarter this year. There it is. The Celtics have now hit 10 threes in the third quarter. Injured? Better phone stone. Shooting really well. Might be continuing to do that. With Sam Hauser sticking to three. That's 19.
New Year's Eve went well for the Celtics. But they've not been playing great outside of that. They destroyed the Raptors, 125-71.
Oh, yep.
That third quarter was just gross. What was it?
It was not competitive.
45-18
yeah.
In the third quarter on New Year's Eve. So the Celtics, after Mazzulla called them out to a degree for their effort and pointed out something we've been talking about, they've already lost more games at the Garden this year than they did all of last year, mm-hmm. and that's playoffs included. They've matched that number six. But they only lost four regular season games at the Garden. So Mazzulla called them out. They answered. But Mazzulla called them out for a reason going into that game. They had lost three out of four. They had lost four out of six going into the New Year's Eve game against Toronto. And they have not played well. And to hear the head coach questioning their effort and their ability to dig in at the defensive end, I think is noteworthy. Calling out their record at home, I think, is noteworthy. Because I think Mazzulla knows this team is, I don't want to say teetering.
No.
They're still number two in the East. I think they still have the third best record in the NBA.
The Knicks are
catching up.
Knicks are cooking. They've won nine straight. They're a half game behind them. So the Celtics could easily fall down to third. Not that that's the be-all end-all either. I mean, how many years was LeBron not the one seed and then would just coast through the Eastern Conference? So it would take quite a bit to be fully alarmed with the Celtics or question their ability to repeat. However, it's not nothing. They're 3-4, I think, in their last seven games. Yeah. And it's, you can go all the way back to they lost that Marcus Smart reunion game. Then they split with the Bulls. They lose
split
to the,
with the Pacers.
They've had issues with the Magic, I feel like, over the last few years.
Yeah.
Yeah, you split with the Pacers, and it's just, if the threes are falling, it's just a runaway freight train. 142 points the other night against Indiana. Like, they are unbeatable when they're hitting their threes. Then when they're not,
okay,
it's
but,
like, all right, I guess we'll just keep taking more.
But the one thing we said all offseason, independent of injuries, the one thing we said all offseason is what could bite them? Complacency.
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing, I think.
That is exactly what we're seeing. Now, it's December into January. Is it just a blip? It might just be a blip. But I think when Mazzulla calls the team out about A, their home record, and B, their effort, I think he sees it and he's worried about it to a degree. You know, he also said he's going to relish the upcoming schedule and all the difficult games they have coming up, starting with Minnesota tonight, which should be a fun game.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So, look, maybe we're panicking over nothing. That's possible. But we said all offseason, outside of injuries, what could bite them? Complacency. And they're complacent. And I think some of it is how they play offense, Keith. I do. It's a lazy way to play offense. Launch up a bunch of threes is a lazy way to play offense, and it helps you fall into bad habits, and I think they've fallen into some bad habits.
But then I think I agree, because then you go back on the defensive end, and like, so you're just on offense where you're not really working for much. You kind of swing the ball around a couple times, then a guy takes a three, misses, and you kind of jog back on defense, and then it seems like they're either leaving guys open or whatever. Like, their defense isn't very good, or very consistent. I think it can be good, but it hasn't been super consistent. They, you know, it is one of those things where every year you have the team that is the defending champion, and whatever opponent you play in the regular season views you as, like, their season. Like, that's the ultimate measuring stick game, right? Like, if Orlando looks at the Celtics, hey, we could beat the Celtics, or, like, the Cavs game, like, a month ago. We could beat the Celtics. Like, it means so much more to the other team than to you. But still, you need to overcome that. Like, you need to, you're still the better team night in and night out. You need to prove it. And that's why I think this next four-game stretch is fascinating. It's all on the road, and it's against four of the best teams in the league. So Minnesota, then you get Ime Udoka in Houston, then you get Oklahoma City, and then Denver. Like, that is an awesome stretch where this shouldn't be difficult to get up for this game. If it's like late December against Indiana or Chicago.
Yeah, or New Year's Eve against Toronto.
I get it.
I would get coasting in that one. Not that they did.
Although Christmas against Philly, that's annoying.
That was a bad game.
You have a lead. You let it slip away on you. Like, that's really annoying. That's one where you would think, hey, it's NBA on Christmas. You'd want to play really well.
Yeah.
But so that one's frustrating. But I think this next four-game stretch, you have a TNT game tonight, which I feel like guys usually get up for. I think the Denver game is also a TNT game. So how do they look? How do they play in these four? I mean, I'd like to see them, you know, go 3-1 or whatever on the stretch.
Say.
I think that'd be good.
You win 3 out of 4? You win all four? Well, then, okay, we were wrong and we were panicking about a bad stretch where you were complacent in December. If you split or drop, you know, three of the games or something like that,
yeah,
it's not as easy to flip the switch as a lot of people assume. And I'll tell you, Minnesota has not been great this year. I think they're 2 games over .500, 17 and 15, something like that.
Yeah. But
they've not been great, but they're talented. And every time these teams play, including earlier this year, it is a highly competitive, fun watch. I remember saying this after the Minnesota game, which the Celtics won. It'd be a great NBA Finals. I don't know that Minnesota's going to get there. They're not playing the same level they were last year, but that would be a great Finals matchup and a fun matchup between these two teams. So it'll be worth a watch, if for no other reason the competitiveness out there, but also to see if the Celtics have flipped a switch after Mazzulla called him out.
I'm trying to see what Anthony Edwards' over-under is. I think it's 24.5, which makes it's right around his average, but I would take the over. Like, I feel like that's the type of guy that is going to have, look at the Celtics and try to go, you know, beat for beat. But same thing with the guys in the Celtics, because Anthony Edwards, we're talking about this during like the Olympic process and things like that, is Tatum might be a better player than Edwards. Edwards, I think, is better than Brown. But Edwards has a personality. He's already been like in a movie. Like, he is more marketable.
He's Santa Claus. Well, I don't know if he's.
I think he's more marketable. You don't think so?
I don't know.
Tatum's in a lot of stuff.
But
yeah, but
like,
what are you doing?
Right, but who is more entertaining?
No, that's true. Tatum's marketable in so far as he's safe.
Yeah,
like, you can throw your logo on him, and you don't have to worry about a scandal. You don't have to worry about being like, oh man, we're committed to this guy. So you're fine. Anthony Edwards is way more charismatic.
Yeah.
But then
yeah,
again,
what did he just get fined for by the league? He was
Anthony
like,
Edwards?
I don't do OT, but a lot of curses mixed in there. He's like, he went, it was against the Rockets, I think, right?
Okay.
And he took a three when they were down two and he won the game, and they interviewed him after the game, like, why'd you take that three? He's like, I don't do overtime. Except with like a lot of F words in there.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. And so, no, it should be a fun game tonight. And we're already getting tweets from our buddy Ray. At Jones WEEI,
right, what's
at Keith 21, Terp, help these two out. They're talking about December NBA like it means something. Well, let's see.
Let's wait 6 months and we'll pick up the basketball talk.
And if they sweep the road trip and they win all four games, don't tell me those January games mean anything either. Just be consistent. I'm going to read into them. I don't think they're playing good basketball, and more importantly, their coach doesn't think they're playing good basketball. So let's see how they handle this trip starting with Minnesota tonight. 617-779-7937. You could jump in there. We'll get back to Drake May. Should he play at all on Sunday? And if so, how much? That's next.